Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Oscar, thanks for making time. Join us on the Ivy Podcast. Maybe for the listeners who are not familiar with you, just give us a little bit of a background about your career history, all the exciting companies you have led, and then we'll talk a bit about what you currently work on.
Yeah, thanks, John, for having me. I'm honored. So basically, I started my career very early days in 1990s. I was doing disco at school, so I know it's not kind of your formula, but that's where I started my entrepreneurial, journey. So I started with all this disco, whatever they call it today, these days, bars or whatever. So that's what I was doing, DJing everywhere. So yeah, and earning some cash, selling some, sneaker chocolate bars. That's what I did. But seriously, I started my career in Astana Motors, one of the largest automobile corporation in Kazakhstan. Now it's also in Central Asia and also going some far north these days. So they set up lots of manufacturing sites here in Almaty and in Kazakhstan. So I started as a sales consultant in 2005. And in just a year or so, I became a CEO of BMW Kazakhstan. So an exclusive distribution company for BMW Mini. Here we had a first Rolls-Royce sales, back in the days. And then I was doing like Honda as well, so some sales for Honda. So I continued my career there for like almost 2008, 2009. And then I was back there for, launching Rolls-Royce Motor Cars, first dealership in Central Asia. We're doing there, and basically my foundation is I'm a sales guy. That's one of the edges, I would say, that that's the thing that I learned from Nurlan Smagula, who was my former boss. So, and I had to cancel my studies there at Keymap University, so I had to go back after all this career switches back and forth. So I started my, joining my learning curve in the United Kingdom, in London. And then I started my own business. Well, because I'm the person who cannot, who cannot hustle. Just like not possible not to do that. So while studying, I got some ideas. It was like I started a distribution company. And also I've been thinking, about starting something in media. So in 2014, I acquired this company, it's a publishing house. They were doing a women's magazine, and it was like the magazine that was led by Ksenia Sobchak, this lady, probably famous or infamous, whatever you call it this day. So she's a, everybody knows in a post-Soviet, countries, this lady. So we're doing this business. One of my partners, he was based in Moscow. He was doing lots of, this media stuff there. So we had very big plans. And that time I was actually interested in doing something digital. So we're trying to switch from, hard copies of this fancy magazine into something digital. But we had this, we didn't reconcile with the team. So they were like thinking, it's kind of not a fancy thing to do. Like digital is not that, luxury. So I sold this magazine and I continued my career. I was invited to lead the team of marketing and sales and development in, there was a bank called Kazkom, Kazkommers Bank. It's one of the largest banks and one of the first, commercial banks in Kazakhstan and in the region. They also had representative offices in Moscow, Bishkek, I think somewhere, maybe Tajikistan or somewhere else. So and I was doing real estate there. So there was like lots of assets, it's collateral that all this banking system had like in abundance, like lots and lots of those apartments and, housing and lands and everything. So we had to do something with that. So I was a part of that team. I was deputy CEO and then I became CEO of the company. So we led the company to our first IPO on KASE, Kazakhstan Stock Exchange. And we sold the company for $1 billion. It was kind of one of the largest exits we did, back in those days. And then I was invited because of that investment profile. I was invited to lead the team of SPK. That's a social entrepreneur corporation located in Almaty region. It's actually a sort of like a Temasek, Kazana type of thing, like Samruk Kazana here in Kazakhstan. So it's more like a regional one. So it's not a sovereign, but it's like something like sovereign wealth management fund, but regional one. So, and I led the team and started there in 2019 and left in 2022. In 3 years, we had, I think, enormous work done by the team and myself. And we had $500 million assets under management. And then I went to Stanford, and there was sort of a click, something changed in my life. So that's where basically I had this touch base with venture capital before. So that was just like a logical continuation, if you will, for venture capital and investments. So I just realized that I had so many things to share with community, like my network, like contacts, like people, experience, expertise. So I wanted to do it's sort of that's the time when you have to give rather than take. That's kind of period where I started my serious venture capital career. I started investing. I continued actually investment, but like with bigger check sizes into like US and Kazakhstani startups. I had a recent exit, which I'm really, really proud of. That's when in 2022, 2023, we decided to do this BYB Capital as the venture firm, focusing on developing Kazakhstani venture space, regional one, Central Asia Caucasus, and also had this part of de-risking strategy going to the United States and Southeast Asia. That's where it all started, and now I'm here. Ended up in Kazakhstan Venture Group as the chief executive officer because I see there's a great potential in really truly developing this ecosystem in the region, first of all in our country.
That's quite a background you have. There's definitely a lot to unpack. I want to talk a little bit further about the first sale of the Rolls Royce, but we'll save that for a little bit later. So majority of the audience on my podcast, the executives, C-levels of large enterprise, mid to large enterprise in US. And, in general, me as a fund manager, when we were raising our first fund, half of the fund were raised from executives as such. And during those conversations, even to them, the entire space of venture capital was relatively new and still remains relatively new. It's a smaller, riskier asset class. So a lot of executives are not necessarily very familiar with that. So it's an educational process that we had to go through working with LPs, potential LPs and things as such. And now you have gone kind of level above, where you're now managing, overseeing the fund of funds, which is basically an entity or the vehicle that invests into other kind of individual funds as us, for example. Maybe share a little bit more insight. What does that mean? How does the structure work? And first of all, maybe tell us a little bit more about the role of the organization that you recently took over.
Yeah. Thank you for the question. I think, first of all, because of my VC career started like many years ago, I had sort of my personal observation about the space, about the startups, about VCs and everything. And of course, I would like to underscore like the major observation is that it's not even an emerging market. It's just started. It's like a baby born. It's just such a like a small baby, like months old probably, and we need to do something with that. Otherwise, if we just wait when this ecosystem gonna develop in some years, wait for like some miracle to happen, I think we're gonna lose everything, right? Because with this AI, and I can't say it's a hype, it's a really true thing that's happening today. And I call it the super cycle that we entered like a couple of years ago. And with this super cycle, normally in economic theory, it just lasts for like 15, 20 years. But with AI development, and I would say the only thing that is, a couple of things that are constraining the true development of the true potential of artificial intelligence is energy and infrastructure, right? Like data centers and chips, right? So with these three things that is not missing, but is still like constraining, imagine if something changed like in a like close, it's definitely gonna change. So where do you see Kazakhstan in like with all this AI development? Like the pace of development is it's a light speed, right? So this kind of speed waiting for some miracle to happen is not a good thing to do, not good trajectory. So that's why I saw this opportunity, you know, to join QVG, because I saw and I still see the potential to, first of all, to grow first-time managers here, because the problem on the market is chicken and egg, right? So lots of institutionals here, they say, if you want to raise from us, you're going to need some other institutional. How can you get another institutional? Is that if that institutional tells you to go to another institutional, ask this money, right? So this kind of thing that cannot happen on the market, and lots of like international players that are asking the same question. But I think they're like probably more right than our institutional players. Why? Mm-hmm. Because they say you should show Kazakh skin in the game, right? And then we can join your fund. Whereas our institutional is telling us the same thing that I said before. So, and I think that's where QVG can, with Allen Ventures Fund, can change this landscape and change the, you know, rules of the game that we have so far. So we're going to support, first of all, our regional. We don't have like this term like Kazakhstan. Mm-hmm. We have region, which is our country as the priority. And then we have Central Asian Caucasus. Right, it could be like Mongolia, right? And it could be like you guys, you registered in Delaware, but we understand that you operate here, right? So American company, or is it like local one? It's a regional one. That's why we don't have this definition of Kazakhstan, because we know that, of course, for us, it's important to support a local infrastructure like Astana mm-hmm. International Financial Center. But we do understand that sometimes when you have like international peace on board, you cannot just do it just because it's still like an emerging market for them. It's just unknown, untapped, right? So, mm-hmm. and the main thesis here is that we are institutional ecosystemic player on the market. Our major goal, mission, I would say, to develop local ecosystem, because lots of missing parts there, right? Like we don't have, you know, if we didn't do like M&As, there's nothing to sell to, right? So, I mean, that's the problem. Another problem is lack of funding. Another problem is with, you know, lack of startup founders. And when we talk about founders, if you just, I think you now realize that most of our founders, number one, they're young, like 10, 25 years old. I'm joking, like 20, 25, right? Mm-hmm. Mostly Gen Zs. Number two, every second startup's doing marketplace, every third is doing the aggregator, nothing more. Like we have, or like I would say deviation in the story where we have like people like Dojan with Cerebri mm-hmm. AI and Hicksville, right? So it's just like deviation in this whole thing, right? So, and we have this role in the market, not just to help to support first-time managers, not just develop the market, but another question arises, how are you going to do that? Mm-hmm. And that's where I think we have these LPs that joined the board. Our board, Allen Ventures Fund, supported us, like eight of them. One is institutional and the rest of them are ultra high net worth individuals. And mostly when we look at the cap table, we see that those guys, not just rich people, they have large corporations behind them, right? So that's also important for the ecosystem, because to them is not just to say, well, you know, we joined this because that reasons, I don't know, like for whatever reason, mm-hmm. but the main important part is that now we're going to develop verticals for you guys, for LPs, right? And then we're going to extrapolate those verticals to you guys, like Big Sky, Most, and rest of the, you know, fund managers here in the region. Why? Because it's important that today we have just sector agnostic VC firms, right? Because lack of startups, founders, and everything, right? So you cannot do like verticals. But with this corporations involved in that space, telling us, well, we're interested in this and that vertical exactly for us. Then you have to, I mean, you realize that, well, first of all, that's the guy who's going to purchase it in future, number one. Number two, they're interested in telling you what verticals they need. And number three, it will, what we believe, our assumption, is that it's going to boost more mature founders involved in that space. Because these days, like our age, fellas, you know, they know there's a lack of funding, right? So they know that the average check size is around $150,000 to $200,000 tops. And what's next? They don't want to leave their careers, right? So they're thinking about their families and, you know, all this, you know, it's Asian culture, right? So you have to think first your family and then the rest is, you know, history for every Asian, right? So that's, I think we're going to boost this things like, and we're going to, you know, I would say ignite this, you know, landscape to create VCs with verticals, to create engineers involved as founders, more mature. And of course, it's going to boost the whole VC landscape, founders landscape in terms of the numbers. Like we're going to, we have this KPI to increase the number of VC funds and founders.
Mm-hmm. That's very exciting. And I think it's timely in terms of the initiatives as such, especially for the local ecosystem. Like you mentioned, it's regional. It's not just one country. And at the same time, you bring up a very interesting topic that I often talk about on my, at least social media, is the development of the CVC, the corporate venture capital. Even in US, you know, there's a couple of companies where, you know, I'm on their board or investment committee where I help them at least develop an infrastructure to build that venture arm. Obviously, you know, the Googles, the Intels, the Salesforces of the world, they have the full kind of the, you know, capacity to build that. But smaller organizations, they're not even sure exactly where to start or how does that work. But at the same time, it's something that's, you know, very much needed, especially here in the region, because companies, they have the resources, they have the capacity, they have the interest, but they may not necessarily have the right tools or even the information on how to build something this internally. So that's a very interesting topic, and probably you and I can talk about CVC as a completely separate episode. But I wanted to ask you a little bit further on kind of the you mentioned the mission of the Fund of Funds, which is very exciting, just in general, developing the regional ecosystem for VCs and the startups. Chicken and the egg analogy is very on point, because we talk to, you know, LPs, potential investors on a global scale as well. And one of the first questions is always that comes up is, you know, the pipeline. Show us the pipeline. Show us the that there's definitely a growing trend of high quality startups, high quality founders. And that's, you know, as you mentioned, it's a baby. It's the baby hasn't even started to crawl. So we're in very early stages. It's a great time to be here. And the development of the Fund of Funds, I think, is critical for development of the VC ecosystem to continuously support that growth. How does that work? Just the overall, you know, for those that are not familiar with the kind of the structure of the Fund of Funds, do you guys maybe tell us in simple terms, folks who are not in venture capital industry, for them to understand, how does the Fund of Fund work? How do you guys attract the money? Is it similar as simple as us VCs, we go and try to raise money from, you know, high net worths and, you know, endowments and so forth? Maybe shed a little bit more light on what happens behind the curtain at the kind of the level above of the Fund of Funds.
Yeah, that's a really good question, because most of the time we think that everybody understands, and most of the people, they pretend to understand everything, right? So in that case, you end up with, like, you know, misunderstanding in that case. So thank you for that. So Fund of Funds, first of all, it stems from the name, right? So it's a fund that invests in funds. So we cannot, I mean, we can, obviously, we can do like direct investment, and we're planning to do that, but not in a region. We're planning to do like probably it's like part of our de-risking strategy. So we're talking like with A16Z, like Founders Fund, Lightspeed, and GC, and rest of the, you know, top tiers in US and elsewhere in the world. we're talking about, you know, sharing the allocation, some deals, like, you know, deal flow part of this thing. Like sometimes you have like one-off deals that happen now, like SpaceX, like many years ago, right? So this kind of deals we want to be part of, that's where we're going to do like direct investment. But it's not like, it's more like core investment strategy rather than direct. So we're not doing any expertise and we don't have capacity, right? So we're asking, you know, this kind of network we have in US and, you know, in the rest of the world, you know, to give us this opportunity to invest in. Mm-hmm. But the core business here is that we invest as the fund, we do fundraising. We're trying to mix the cap table. I mean, that means that look, the investors, right? So we have institutional, the one that invests as an institution, like financial institution, and other like ultra high nets. But most of the ultra high nets, the rich people, right? So most of them do not join our cap table as individuals. Then mostly they join us as the corporations, like the, I will not name it. Yeah, but you can imagine, right? So, and of course, we want to have some involvement of government too. It's important that, you know, business, they see the support from government. I think that's a really good, if you remember, I always relate to South Korean experience where government, you know, all these wealthy people, they just joined into one something, you know, unified movement, mm-hmm. I would say. And they started this thing with all this Korean K-pop and everything that we know today. So we are registered as the company at AIFC, Astana International Financial Center. Mm-hmm. This is where our company is being registered so far. And it's like a normal structure of GPLP. So GP is the managing company. That's where Kazakhstan Venture Group is the name of that managing company, where I work as a CEO. Mm-hmm. Where we have board of directors, where two-thirds of number of directors we have so far is going to be independent directors, including the chairman of the board. That's a very important message that we're going to say and tell to the world, that we're very independent. We're trying to stay like with professionals, you know, not to, you know, that we see the government involved in terms of like managing this fund. So mm-hmm. we have two funds registered so far under this managing company. One of it's Alum Ventures Fund, which is fund of funds, the one that will invest in other funds. And we call it underlying funds. And it stems from the name, very simple, right? So any fund that is in region and elsewhere in the world is called underlying fund. Mm-hmm. And another fund is digital assets fund. It's more like we call it a national reserve crypto fund, where it's the same thing that is happening today in the United States and I think somewhere else in the world. I'm not sure, but I know for sure that it is happening in the U.S. where you have this, you know, digital assets so far expropriated from like, you know, different like illegal operations and by government, and then you don't have any place to save it, right? So to keep it, to store it. So that's kind of thing we're initiated today. And also it's not just closed fund just for those kind of assets, but also for, you know, people who want to earn, who understands that space like in a professional way and want to be part of it. Some like, you know, like purchasing some like cryptos. We're just thinking still like on a investment thesis, but that's the basic thing about this. And so fund of funds, you know, going back to this fund of fund thing. So we invest in funds and we just have different check size for regional and for international. So we have a target size of $1 billion, but we believe we're going to do filing closing. The first closing we're going to do like this August. We're going to, finish it and finalize it by the end of the August, which is literally now. That's what I'm doing. Yeah. We're going to start deploying money. Mm-hmm. By that, I mean that we're going to start investing in other funds late September this year. So the last quarter of 2025, that's our active period of, you know, investments. So that's why we're working with you closely to understand the needs. And also we're doing like criteria for the local funds and regional funds. And we're going to present it to you guys so that we like sort of do a customer development so that we understand, not like doing ourselves, like, you know, I know everything in this world, so I'm going to do this type of criteria and then nobody's going to get this money, right? So that's not what we want to do. So I told my team that we have to go and, you know, you know, do a sort of customer development so that we match the market and we understand the needs and everything, right? So, and another thing is that we're going to do a final close, a year and a half, 2 years tops. And our final closing, we're thinking about the number like $450 million, $500 million. That's more realistic. And yeah, and we'll take it from there. And we have this fund distribution upon our, you know, getting to this $400 and $500 million target size. We're thinking about a fund distribution 70 to 30%. 70% will be allocated the world, and 30% will be allocated here on this market. And we do believe that's a pretty huge number still, like, you know, and we have this life cycle for the fund where, you know, this fund is, the life cycle of this fund is 12 years, which is normal for funded funds. And our investment period is 5 years. Normally it's like 2 to 3 years, but it's like in VC firms who are investing directly in startups. But here it's a different story. That's why we have 5 years. It could be like plus one. Yes. And what else? And yeah. And like normal things like we have 10% of carry interest, which is not like normal for the VC firms, because normally it's like 20-25% these days. We're doing 10% because we understand that's, we're like fund to fund. We don't want to do like double counting on our side. Mm-hmm. And we have a strong LPAC, you know, rights. And in our fund, we have this strong independent board of directors. We have very strong investment committee with international presence there. And we have advisory board. So yeah, that's basically how we do our operations.
So it sounds like, you know, you guys are almost a startup of your own as well.
Where yeah,
you
guys, that's true.
Just like, you know, the startups that we invest in. And I always give them analogy that me as Big Sky Capital, I'm also a startup at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
I go through the same process. I go through the same fundraising. I just raise from different entities. They're asking me very similar questions in terms of
absolutely
due diligence, traction, and all of that great stuff. Is that something similar at the fund of funds level when you guys meet with the sovereign wealth funds, with, you know, huge institutions? Maybe tell us a little bit about how does those meetings go, similar structure of the questions in terms of your kind of the investment thesis, traction, portfolio construction, to the extent that you can share, what are some of the things that are being discussed in those conversations at that level?
Yeah, it's absolutely, first of all, it's absolutely true that we are at that level where we consider our you know, our team and me myself being, you know, part of this startup, because in fact it is a startup.
Sure.
And in fact we're first time managers too, right? So that's kind of, you know, again, chicken and egg thing. And then the best part of it is that we're backed by government. That's the best part of it, I would say, in terms of when we talk to other, you know, wealth management funds, sovereign wealth management funds, and other institutionals, they do realize that we're backed up by the government, and for them it's kind of signal, which is positive. Mm-hmm. Right? So but anything else is the same. It's the same thing, it's the same structure. But I would say it is even more challenging. It is more challenging because of you have to go through a KYC process, know your customer, right? It's due diligence and everything is kind of, why is it challenging? Because the major reason is that you're not just investing in startups, you're investing in other legal entities, right? So it's very complex. So in this case, we see that, first of all, when we get this RFI from various funds, request for information, we see a very structured way of questionnaires we get there, like a very serious due diligence and asking our background and like lots of other things we have to tell them and to prove that we can do that, right? And whereas it's really hard, and that's why we're thinking more, you know, do our fundraising mainly in Asian countries and some European, like very few of them that are, you know, they mostly like Eastern European, I would say, not like a central one or Western one. Mm. They just don't, they know nothing about this part of the world. Whereas yeah. I say, on contrary, this is the only untapped market. It is true, John. It's just like the only one. You go anywhere in the world and you will find VCs there, but not here. And the question is why? I mean, I see lots of interest from China, right? So it's a good message for American counterparts. It's I mean, you don't want to lose this market, you know, in this all geopolitics. You just don't want to do that. We have this supercomputer. When our American friends hear that and say, "How? That's a long line. I would never even imagine that there's a you know, a long list for, you know, countries to get the supercomputer, and we got it." Like, and I don't know how, but that happens. You know, it's just here in Kazakhstan, and you know, we have Starlink launched recently here. So lots of precursors, I would say, that you know, help our market not just to emerge in this VC landscape, but also to prosper. So I think that's the right time, like you said, and I think we have right number of people and companies and human capital here, you know, to not to revolutionize, but still like to prosper in the space, in the region, and maybe in the world, like AI. Maybe it's our, you know, first unicorn.
No, absolutely. Because at the end of the day, you know, I deal personally with that challenge on a daily basis, operating in US, trying to, you know, fundraise for my fund from the US investors, and the perception just overall of our country of Kazakhstan is just not there yet. So it's exciting to see those developments. That's definitely going to be a huge level up in terms of getting that credibility, getting that reputation, because at the end of the day, there's a lot of moving parts that help put Kazakhstan on the map. Like as a recent IMF, you know, announcements on GDP for the first time ever passing Russia, being at 14.8, you know, moving up, you know, three spots at the largest economies in post-Soviet space, you know, passing quite a few countries and being, you know, number four now on the entire list. So there's a lot of things happening in the region. Personally, you know, actually after 26 years in US, you know, just moving my family back here and operating here, that's, I see that firsthand, just being here now, boots on the ground. And like you said, it's a great opportunity, and you know, you don't want to miss that as well, because a lot of things are happening. In terms of the kind of, you've mentioned working with a lot of kind of Asian entities as well. And I see some examples at the startup level where companies are doing great. They're expanding to US, but at the same time, they have, you know, they face challenges raising from, you know, US, true US funds because of that lack of maybe, you know, information or credibility, or maybe even some success stories. How, just from your personal perspective as a VC, what are some of the things that our founders should be doing, or how should they be approaching that particular challenge? Because it's only going to grow, right? And it's, you know, we have more cases where founders have been able to successfully raise and, you know, operate in US or large markets like this. But maybe just put on the hat of kind of as a VC fund operator, and maybe share some insights from your personal standpoint, how, you know, the startup founders can and should think when it comes to scaling their companies globally.
Yeah, really great question. And I love to answer it, because that's the pain point, you know, in my VC career, and I identified. And that's, I think, where one of the reason why I, you know, I'm still like a partner in BYB Capital, but I'm switching this kind of career path to more like institutional one. And because I believe in those things that I said before. And the thing here is that is lots of problems with that, you know, when our, you know, founders from this part of the world, specifically I'm saying from Kazakhstan, they go to the United States for just one obvious reason. Is very big market. That's what they say, right? So it's well, yes, you know, that's kind of you know, very obvious things, right? So you can't first of all, you cannot say like we go to United States because it's the large market, right? So you have to understand that United States, although it's a one state like the US, right, but it comprises of you know, 50 states, and every state is different, right? Almost like every state is different. So, and we have like cases when people, they just travel to one state somewhere in the West or North, and they try fundraise in California. That's not possible, because there's an anecdote in the Silicon Valley is that when VCs, they say, we invest only in founders that are 45 minutes from us. That's 45 minutes. It's not just it's very close, somewhere in the valley, right? So you can be like somewhere in Palo Alto, the East Palo Alto, the least part of the, you know, Silicon Valley, but you could be there, but, you know, still reachable by Menlo Park, you know, this Sand Hill Road VCs, right? So that's kind of strategy. You have to do your homework. But the worst part of it is that, and I think that's the major problem, is that when our founders, they start their startups here in Kazakhstan, and they do fundraising here, and they get a very large cap table, and lots of VCs here, they ignore the valuation. They think, well, we don't care about valuation because at some point you can die. But if you approach, that's my opinion, based on opinions of lots of, you know, American top tier VCs, is that when you approach any startup with that kind of methodology where you keep in mind that you don't care about valuation because this guy can die at some point, that means that it's kind of risky, you know, it means that you don't believe in that, right? So because my approach is that when I choose 10 startups or 15 startups where I want to invest in, I always approach them as the potential exit, as the potential, you know, big fella, you know, this kind of thing that I have on my mind, because I can't approach in a different way. Mm-hmm. It's one thing. Why that is a problem? Because with this valuation, inflated, I would say, overstated, whatever you call it, they go to United States with that Kazakh cap table. Even though they register not a new entity, it doesn't matter, because still they have investors on board. Mm-hmm. And they have that inflated, overstated valuation. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, there in the United States, your ideas and your traction in Kazakhstan is zero, equals zero. Nothing is going to be considered there. Well, okay, fine. You're good. We're like happy for you. You know, any American will tell you like, you know, good for you, nothing more, right? So it's good for you, nothing else, right? So you have to keep in mind when you go there, United States, US centric economy, and you tell us, well, you know, we have, you know, registered, we changed the domicile, now we're in Delaware, elsewhere, United States, so like American company, but our valuation is $25 million. But you have zero traction in US. It doesn't match the expectation of, you know, of the VCs in the United States. That's where that's where there's a clash. Mm-hmm. And I will not name them, but you know all of them. They still facing the same problem because you cannot, I mean, your valuation is not, it's not just fair, you know, on that market because you have zero traction on US market. And it's not just about Kazakhstan. If I sell anywhere, like, there's a story about this Instacart founders.
Yeah.
Pure Americans, right? So Stanford alum. Mm-hmm. And they started this company and they started, you know, they were like spending and the expansion rate was like, they were growing like, I don't know, like 400% every single month. So they widespread in the US. But what happened there is that VCs, and you also have to keep in mind that VCs are your assistants, your helpers, the guy, the team that can help you with strategy, help you with financials, because most of the time you don't have understanding what's happening in the financial world, right? So everything you do in Excel, that's the maximum thing you can do there. So they found out, the investors, that there's a problem with contribution margin in their product, which is very important in Instacart. And they said anything you do in the US, although they'll give it almost in every single state, it doesn't matter because it's negative numbers. So what they did it like retroact or whatever you call it. They started, you know, from ground up.
Yeah.
They went back to San Francisco and started all over again. Mm-hmm. With no saying like, well, you know, you don't know anything in this world. You know, you're not founder. You're like some VC sitting somewhere in that fancy offices. They didn't say that. They said, okay, yeah, that's true. And they found out that there was a mistake there, like, because they're growing, expanding, but numbers are not there. Why? Mm-hmm. So VCs helped them and then started all over again. And I mean, what happened? Nothing, but just success, some successful company, the multi-billion company today. So that's the problem, you know, where you know, our pride does not allow us, you know, to listen to VCs telling us, well, how do you know? You've never been there.
Yeah.
I'm always telling you, like, you've been there for 26 years, and I've been coming to the United States for 30 years, right? And I haven't lived there, like, for more than, like, a year, but not I understand the culture, but I talk to many people, and I listen to a lot of podcasts like yours, right? So I do some conclusions, like, what's happening there?
Yeah.
But I think that's the major problems that are, you know, our founders are facing in the United States, and I think the baseline here is that you have to do your homework. Like, what's the mindset there? How do the VCs are thinking? What way? What's their concern? And where should I register the company? Where should it be based in? Like, if you're raised in California, we'll stay there. I know it's very expensive, but that's the path that you choose, right? Not me. I haven't made sure to do that.
No, very great examples, Oscar. Obviously, you know what you're talking about And in conclusion, I'm personally very excited. First of all, congratulations on that appointment, because excited you understand our pain first and foremost, firsthand as a VC yourself. I think that's a huge win there for the ecosystem, to be able to kind of put yourself in the shoes of the actual protagonist and understand all of the challenges and everything that we face on a daily basis as well. You have a huge undertaking in front of you, so I wish you best of luck. One thing I know is that what I admire about, you know, a very close circle of friends of mine is the level of discipline. I talk about that myself all the time. To me, it's a huge factor. To me, it's a huge, indicator of that person is going to be successful if they're disciplined. And I know for sure you're disciplined, because I see you in the gym all the time with me. So Oscar, I want to thank you for your time today. I personally learned quite a bit. I'm confident that a lot of people are going to find that insightful as well, because there's not a lot of content out there. There's not a lot of information in terms of how, you know, what is even fund of funds. So I appreciate your willingness to share some of that information. And I'm definitely looking forward to staying in touch with you. And like with all the guests, we do re-recordings in about a year to see how much have changed, to see how much have transpired ever since our first conversation.
Yeah. Thank you for having me, John. It was like a nice conversation, and always I'm here to learn, and I wish you all success. And I think it's not just us doing the successful story here, not me, of course, personally, but I think us as the team, like you and us and the whole market and founders, because I truly believe in one thing in our countries, you know, it's human capital. So, and I think I truly believe that we are part of that human capital. And I think that's the major, I would say, driver, not just in the region, but, you know, in this part of the world, and that can lead to success. So thank you again.